started. So welcome. It is now January 10th, 2020. And I'm Molly Kellogg, and this is the every few months nutrition counseling roundtable call that I sort of randomly schedule, and I never know how many we're going to get. Today it looks like we may have a smaller number than usual. At this point we have three people, and we may have some more join us. We could do this for as long as an hour. If you don't have that much to talk about, it'll be shorter, whatever. Now, I will note that if you know that you're going to have some noise in your background, you can always mute your phone by doing 4-star if you don't happen to have a mute button on your phone, and then you 4-star again to allow us to hear you again. This is a very informal phone call. It's not a seminar. I don't have content planned or anything. The overall topic is the counseling process in a nutrition care setting, where this is where you get to share things that are going well. It's always great when you can do that, and also bring up struggles and challenges. I will just mention at this point that I do have upcoming trainings during this year in LA in March, in Atlanta in April, in Minneapolis, actually, Rachel, in June, in Winnipeg, Manitoba, in September, and in Boston in October. I've been talking to the folks in Toronto possibly about July, and I may be able to add one in December, but that's pretty much it for 2020. Actually, I'd love to come back to New York. Dina, I'm always looking for a host there who can help me get a
great
room. I think it's about time for me to come back to New York. The struggle is that I need a room that someone can manage to allow me to use in exchange for you getting to come for free. So if you have an agency or a hospital that would have such a thing, that would be great.
I will definitely keep my eyes and ears out. I don't know of anything just yet, but if you give me a target date at some point, you know, a little cushion of time, I'm happy to put the feelers out for you.
It would probably be the very beginning of December, something like that.
Perfect.
You know, a little after Thanksgiving. And the other thing that I've sometimes done, I've sometimes paired with a internship program where I will come in the afternoon before on a Thursday afternoon and do a 3-hour workshop for the interns, and then the program allows me to use a room in their facility for the next 2 days, Friday and Saturday, to do my 2-day training. So that's another option too, but I'll just throw that out there. Anyway, so we have three people on the call, so who would like to jump in with I think someone else just joined us. Who just joined us?
This is Dana Fortunato.
From where are you from?
Oh, from Wilmington, North Carolina.
North Carolina. Okay, so we have four people, Minneapolis, Oregon, New York, and North Carolina. And Dana, you missed the introduction, but have you been on these calls before?
I have. It's been a while, so I'm excited to join today.
Sure. And as you may remember, it's very informal. And the content is brought up by you guys. So who would like to jump in with either something positive that's going well or some cool resource to share or a challenge or question?
Hi, Molly. It's Dina from New York City.
Okay.
I just wanted to – I'm still kind of new in the world of dietetics. I finished and became an official dietitian in 2016. I've kind of been easing into some part-time gigs here and there. Some of it's outpatient counseling, and some of it's corporate wellness, and some of it is – I'm an adjunct teacher, too. So the reason why I'm
going
a little of everything. The reason why I joined this call is to be a little bit more familiar with maybe some other people who are a little bit more veterans in the profession and also people who are a little bit more ingrained in the MI approach. But I've downloaded a lot of your materials. I've yet to take one of your workshops only because I've been spread so thin that I can't necessarily commit to a particular timeline. But
right.
What I've have so far is definitely very helpful. And I will say, you know, with all due respect to a lot of our undergrad and even graduate learnings in our classes, we don't really dive in too deep into things. It's very, you know, high level, just understanding theories and behavioral stuff. But I know nowadays with the new generation of dietitians, we are starting to definitely gear more towards that behavioral approach, and especially those who are, I guess, pursuing, you know, intuitive eating and this type of thing, where they're taking away the components of being a little bit more clinical and really getting into that behavioral thing. I definitely feel, you know, nervous or not as confident, but with your materials, I'm feeling like I'm getting there. So I just wanted to say thank you for that, because it's given me a little bit more sturdy foundation than I guess what I had in school, like, you know, real world approaches and critical thinking skills and being able to sit and listen. So I very much appreciated all the stuff that you put out there.
Sure. Well, thank you for that. And the issue of training for these skills in the initial training process, the didactic programs and the internship, that is a struggle that professors and internship directors really struggle with, because I talk with a lot of them, and the online program that you may have used, the Steps to Counseling Excellence, I have a similar program designed for interns, and the problem is that they're not out there yet. Adina, you probably experienced this when you were in school. Unless you're going for the degree and the internship after having a fair amount of life experience, it's really hard to pick up those skills when you're not actually on the ground yet, not really working with clients. And so it's a real issue. And then, frankly, Dina, quite a long time ago that I went through school, I got my master's in 79, so a long time ago, and there was actually no requirement at all for any counseling training at all. I don't know if there's anyone else on the call who's my vintage, but it's it certainly has come, profession has come a long way in terms of providing more training. I think the only, this is the me getting on a soapbox a teeny bit. The only concern I have is that it may not be made clear during your training that what you get is not enough, that you would be expected to get more training and experience on those real experiential-type skills.
Right.
after you get out, and I think you've discovered that, essentially, yourself.
Yes, exactly. And as an adjunct, I'm still fairly new at being an adjunct, but I do teach the you know, the 200, 300 levels in the didactic program. So I make a point, even though my subject matter isn't exactly focused on counseling at all, it's, you know, life cycle and things like that, but there's a component in there that I always include in my lessons to get the students right there at that earlier stage to understand that it's not just about the calculations and learning about, you know, EER and all these things, making sure that you understand the components of the behaviors, the experience, what people bring to the table, how compliant they are, where they're ready to start. And you come up, I include a lot of different RDs as resources, and you are definitely one of the components that I integrate for them to learn and read a little bit more about. So even if it's not in the textbook, I make sure that there's always a class where we go into the discussion of counseling, you know, systems.
Good. Does anybody else want to jump in? Have any thoughts on this for Dina or anything?
I'd like to jump in. My name is Rachel. I'm one of the dietitians from Minneapolis. So I've been a dietitian for about 2 years and have some of the similar struggles with nutrition counseling and just trying to get experience with how to kind of roll with the resistance with certain clients. I've functioned mostly as my nutrition counseling sessions being over the phone, so I lack the body language and sometimes facial expressions from clients. And so what I find challenging is to challenge my clients. And at what level can I challenge my clients without, you know, with providing the correct information but without kind of overstepping the line? Do you have any advice for those type of situations?
Oh, Yeah, let's have a talk about, well, particularly both resistance and working on the phone, which is different,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
Yeah.
I have written a tip on working on the phone. I don't have in front of me my alphabetical list of my tips so I can find it, but I will attempt to do that while we're talking. And also I've written a couple tips on dealing with resistance. One of the things you mentioned already is the phone, that it's really hard without body language. And I haven't done an awful lot of work on the phone. I really will not in my private practice work with someone on the phone unless I've gotten to know them in person a bit first.
Okay.
And I find that I really have to do that in order to do it well. I'm gathering, though, that you don't necessarily have that ability to make that requirement. sorry, I have allergies, so I have a little bit of a cough here.
Oh, no worries. No problem at all.
There's one thing I'll mention, then I'll see if anybody else has anything to chime in. There's something that people who work on the phone a lot have told me, and that is that they find that one of the MI skills that seems especially important is summarizing.
Okay.
Periodically during the call, maybe even more than in an individual session, in-person session, sort of stepping back for a moment and saying, so, okay, what I'm hearing you say is you do care about this and you're concerned about this and your plan this week is, you know, do a little bit of a summary. It doesn't have to be a big deal one, but just to sort of, a little more often than you would in person, make sure you're on the same page.
Okay.
Yes, a phone session, tip number 89. So that's on my website, tip number 89. Anyway, what does that sound like to you, Rachel?
That sounds great, and that's something that I've, over the past year as I've been doing more and more phone nutrition counseling sessions, is that it's very helpful for me as the person that's providing the counseling service to make sure that that's a way that we can stay on track, too. So that's something that
mm-hmm. yeah.
I will definitely use in the future. And I wanted to say, too, mm-hmm. that during my undergrad nutrition education in my didactic program, one of my adjunct professors actually used a lot of the free resources that you have on your website.
Mm-hmm.
We listened to the free podcasts and talked about
mm-hmm.
nutrition counseling. And so we did have a little bit of that in my undergrad education, and I just wanted to say thank you for providing all of those free resources
mm-hmm.
for
yeah.
not only dietitians but students too. So thank you.
Right. Sure. And you, like Dina, is aware that then when you get out there, just having learned about it isn't enough. You have to have experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Go back to the drawing board a bunch of times, things like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You also might find one of the very early tips that I wrote, asking the client for direction. I mean, this is certain tip number 4, so it's in my first volume of my practice workbook. There is a value in literally asking the client, what do you want to talk about today? Which of these particular behaviors would you most, you know, think is most important? You know, so keep putting it back on them, and that's another way to keep them present when they're on the phone.
Rachel and Molly, may I add to that?
Sure.
I'm actually looking at the workbooks here, and yes, tip number 4 mm-hmm. definitely is helpful. I work in an OBGYN office, and a lot of
uh-huh.
the patients that come are diagnosed with gestational diabetes. So even if they don't follow like the typical, stereotypical, quote unquote, you know, risk factors and conditions, it sometimes catches them by surprise. So I'm there to educate them and provide them with the materials, but everybody takes it from where they're at and does something different with it. So depending on
mm-hmm.
if they need nutrition modifications or they already know everything
mm-hmm.
and they're, you know, physically
right.
active. So I do say, what resonates with you? Does this make sense? And what are some of the things that you've heard that you think might you might need to adjust based on what you're doing already? Because not everybody's obviously going to find follow the same guidelines. So that has definitely been very helpful for me, not to come at it like, here's what I'm given and a script and, you know, here are all the guidelines that
right.
I have to do with gestational diabetes and then be,
right.
be confused
and,
by it.
And Dana, you bring up a really, you mentioned in there, and I want to underline it, you said asking them what they know or have heard, right? Because now that can refer to things they've heard from the doctor or the nurse, things they heard from their aunt, you know, or things they've heard from you. And we can't assume that if we
exactly.
said something that it came through exactly the way we wanted it to. So, you know, getting them to sort of feed back to us what's in there. And, you know, I used to work in obstetrics years ago. I loved that population. And
yes.
I must say I was always so amazed the range of ways that people approached gestational diabetes, you know, everywhere from, no big deal, you know, what's the big deal, you know. And you and I know what the big deal is, right? We can explain that to you. Anything from
right.
that to freaking out and thinking, oh, my God, what have I done to my baby? And,
exactly.
you know, tell me exactly what to do. I've stopped eating because I think I shouldn't eat anything, you know. and the more we can sort of elicit where they're at first and figure out if what we're doing is reassuring them and calming them down, and then giving them some information, or being, well, Rachel mentioned the word sort of confronting them a little or challenging them. Some people need I don't want to say beat them over the head, but, you know, be really clear with them about the consequences of not making the changes we're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of us might come across this regardless of the population we work with, where people sometimes show up and say, I don't know, just tell me what to eat or just hand me a meal plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it's not really that easy or that simple, because I might hand you something, but, you know, maybe you don't follow these types of food rules or preferences. And so I'd really rather meet you where you're at and try and work with you in establishing something like, you know, the SMART goal discussion and helping them feel like it's a little bit more achievable than just say, a piece of toast and a piece, you know, some peanut butter and that type of thing. So yeah, I definitely agree
mm-hmm.
with what you're saying there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's the first elicit of elicit, provide, elicit. It, you know, it's funny. I sometimes say in my training programs that one of the things I learned to do when I have that, what I call an ooh, ooh, ooh moment, like, ooh, I want to tell you this good information that I have, you know, and I have all sorts of cool plan ideas, and, you know, we all have that moment, you know, those moments. And that, to me, has become a signal or a clue that it's time for me to do the first elicit, to ask that part of me that's getting all excited, you know, to calm down and wait for a moment and elicit some things first. And it will, that excited part of me will get a chance, but not right away. So let's get that. I'm aware that we haven't really talked too much about Rachel's concern about resistance. Rachel, tell me a little bit more about perhaps maybe an example of what it is you hear, because you're on the phone. What
yeah.
do you hear that you're concerned about?
A lot of the times I hear some resistance with diabetic education, or a person with diabetes, with educating them about a carbohydrate consistent diet, and really
mm-hmm.
just kind of encouraging the, you know, the benefits to, oh, you know, do you pay attention to the carbohydrates in your diet? Would I be able to provide you with some more information about how to do that? And then clients saying, you know, yeah, I already know, or I don't really pay attention to that too much. And how I kind of manage
mm-hmm.
that with, you know, explaining the benefits of doing that, but I'm just wondering if there's something a little bit more that I could be doing for those clients.
Mm-hmm. So the words you hear are something like, oh, I don't pay attention, or what was the other one? I already know it all, basically.
Yeah.
I already know. Yeah, and of course, a lot of people with who have had diabetes for quite a while indeed may know a lot, or at least have been told a lot. So Rachel, so far, how do you handle that? Let's say when somebody says, oh, I already know it all. I already know about carb counting. How do you handle that?
Well, I try to, that's where I kind of bring in the challenging part of this for clients. So I like to, you know, of course, kind of challenge them to ask, you know, well, what foods contain carbohydrates, or what foods do you think in a typical breakfast meal that you have would be a carbohydrate choice? So that's something I start with. But I'm always wondering if there's a way to try to encourage clients to listen to me and want to make some changes, paying attention to carbohydrates in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have one thought that pops up for you, and that would be in tip number 148, which is in the archives, starting out with an affirmation. Because if somebody says, oh, I already know, I already do this, right? I know, Rachel, that there's a little voice in your head saying, oh, yeah, maybe they don't,
yeah.
You know, or maybe they're missing something, right?
Yeah.
Rolling with it, but you may be wrong, for one thing, you know, they may be super well informed. Go ahead and affirm it first, though.
Okay.
I hear you. You've been coming to this program for a while, so you've heard all the things that dietitians and nurses tell you. I got it. You're well informed. You know, just go right with it first.
Okay.
And then you do want to check, though, right? Because that's your job. Then you go into what I tend to think of as the Columbo character. Rachel, you're probably too young to remember the Peter Falk TV character named Columbo.
I remember it.
You do? Okay. He was a detective in Hollywood or something, and he would always act really dumb, right? And like, oh, you know, can you help me understand this? I don't understand, you know. And he would get all the answers from the suspects, you know. So after affirming, you know, and going right along with it, you could say, well, how about just humoring me here for a minute, because, I'm new here and I'm just getting to know you, and I want to make sure we're covering all the bases, and I do care that you get the best care here, or throw in a few things like that. And then say, so tell me what it is tell me how you doing it as more an open-ended. Tell me how your day goes, or how you keep track of carb count, you know, exchanges, or something pretty open-ended, rather than doing it as a quiz, a detailed quiz, because, well, they may feel quizzed for one thing.
Yeah.
Which might bring up more resistance. Do it a little more open, and can you? And it's sort of like you acting dumb and saying, you know, can you just? I'm trying to get a sense here of how you keep track of your carbs during the day. Sort of run me through what goes through your mind. Then you'll start hearing, hopefully, stuff that actually sounds true. If you start hearing crazy myths and, you know, misinformation, then you have a place to go. Now, I've been blathering on for a bit, Rachel.
No, that's incredibly helpful. It's incredibly helpful. Thank you. Yes, that's one thing that was my goal of accomplishing that question or asking that question, was just kind of see how I can roll with the resistance but also not build more resistance with how I go about, challenging, quote unquote, those clients. So I appreciate your answer, and I will definitely use it. So thank you.
Sure. And you might want to go back to my website and look at the archives. Tip number 103 and 130 are both about some resistance too, and you may get a few more ideas about wording. I'm hearing that you like picking up wording ideas.
Yes, I do. I do. I very much do. But I do have some reading to do, so thank you.
Sure. Well, good.
Molly, can I jump in here too? I just wanted to thank both you and Rachel. It's Dina again. Because, part of the reason why I have 50 different jobs is because I'm not entirely sure how I want to whittle it down, but hearing Rachel about like the virtual sessions, but not even, it sounds like not even face-to-face where you can see each other. It's more just like phone counseling, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I didn't even think of. Like, I can't see the person's body language. And so right now I'm fortunate enough to be sitting side by side, but maybe one day if I do a different, if I'm in a different facility, or if I pursue private practice in that way, that might be an option for me. And then I have to kind of be challenged in that respect as well. So Rachel, thank you for sharing, you know, your challenges right now. And
mm-hmm.
thank you, Molly, for kind of, you know, setting up how we could possibly rectify that.
Right, right. And if you're doing it with it, most corporate wellness programs, I think, do phone rather than virtual with video as well, simply because not everyone on the other end has the technology. But if you're doing private practice, you might be able to do it with video as well, and that can work a little better. Some people have told me, and it certainly seems true to me too, that one big difference between just audio and video is that with audio, someone can be wandering around their house, they can be doing their dishes, they can, you know, when there's video too, it's not very easy for them to do that, right? And they're more apt to be present.
Right. That's true.
Yes, that's definitely a challenge I have at times.
yeah. Rachel, you didn't ask this, but I'll just chime in. When you have a sense that someone is multitasking, basically, you could, the way I do it anyway, is I sort of own it as my concern. I'll say, you know, I'm noticing a fair amount of noise in your room, or, you know, just saying something that indicates you hear what's happening, or the TV's on or something. And then I'll say, you know, I don't know about you, but I find it difficult to focus on what we're talking about. Might you turn the TV off? Or is there a quiet room in your house? Or, you know, so that I'm owning it as I would like them to do that. It happens to be true, but it also hopefully gets it quieter for them.
Yes, that's helpful too. And there are times where I will, if I find that the client that I'm talking to is a little distracted, or like you said, sounds like there's some multitasking going on, I always just ask, is this a good time to wrap up for the day? Is the amount of information that I've provided you enough to sit with and go over again? And then I always just offer to schedule a follow-up phone appointment where we can kind of go over and review things again, and then hopefully pick back up when the environment's a little calmer.
Yeah, and notice how that's respectful of them when you say, you know, how about we find a time that fits better for you? You know your schedule, you know your life. It puts it back on them in a hopefully respectful way, as opposed to a, you know, confrontative kind of way.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so where are we? Other topics, challenges. We haven't heard from Barbara or Dana. Do either of you want to bring something up?
Hey, Molly, this is Dana in North Carolina. And I really appreciate all that you do. I wanted to just give you a little shout-out as well. I did one of your counseling workshops when I was a new dietitian. It was 10 years ago. And and it really, like, I started PRN inpatient, and I knew I wanted to do outpatient, and my internship director just gave me a chance and let me run, you know, a nutrition program, and I felt like had absolutely no experience and no skill set. So it really empowered me, like, those first few years, and I really think it made a difference in my work early on. And then I think that you get complacent at points, and I just am in this, like, point. I'm at this point right now where I'm just going back to to look at what I want to refine and areas that I want to improve. And I have since, I was hospital-based for a long time, outpatient, and I am since now in private practice, which I love. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of MI now has just become natural, which feels so so good. But then I also feel like I need to own maybe some areas that I could be improving on. So my interest right now really is with group work. I want to get more involved in support groups. And I used to run them in the past. I work with primarily weight loss surgery patients, so those who have had or those that are pursuing weight loss surgery. And I'm very comfortable with groups and applying motivational interviewing in groups, but the challenge now is that I'm going to be doing online groups. And would love some feedback or tips on how I can, I want to set up the group to start to support MI, and I'm wondering how I can kind of get buy-in and ownership from the group members to do, to help with this.
Good questions. Yeah, and I'm hearing, Dana, that you're aware that with groups, how they begin, how you set them up, is really important. The whole the culture of the group. Absolutely.
And that's something I'm really excited about, is because I there's a need for it. So my clients routinely are telling me, like, this is a need, this is a need. So I have an opportunity. I want to just, I want to do it the right way, and I want it to be the best it can be.
Oh, congratulations and good luck. That's great.
Thank you.
Now, will it be with video? Will it be using Zoom or something like
that? So I have the ability to make it so I have options. I can do a Zoom, and I can close it off at a certain number. It could be just audio, you know, to allow for more attendance. It could be a mix. It could be in-person and audio. So I want to meet the needs. So there's a need for busy parents, you know, who can have someone watch the kids in the other room, you know, but break away for an hour. So I want to
Or people maybe in harder to reach geographically.
Yes, I have, I have clients that, you know, commute an hour and a half to come to my office. So the evening is just a barrier with traffic and family and things.
And I presume you've read my tips on working with groups. That's in volume three of my practice workbook.
Volume three. Okay.
If you get, do you have volume three?
I have to check. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think I might just have one and two, so I need to look into that.
Right. Yeah. Three came out a little bit later. And it's tip number 84. I wrote a bunch of different tips on groups, and then I grouped them all together in that book. If you, excuse me, if you wanted me to send you a PDF of those tips before you get a copy of the book, I'd be glad to do that. Just email me. So that would be one thing to do. And because you've run groups already, I'm presuming you already do the things like the, at the beginning, sort of giving the ground rules and expectations, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so so it's been years. So I haven't run, I've never started my own group. Like there was a therapist that had started groups when I was in Boston, and then we jumped in, and then we kind of separated them and traded off. So we had already, so we had printed a set of ground rules and put them up on the wall, and we would review them frequently. And it was really great to be able to pull back, you know, if someone was, like, we had a rule about language and a rule about, like someone confidentiality, someone hijacking the group, just things that created like a negative, a negative energy. So that's something I'm comfortable with, but I didn't know if there was a particular approach to, to even presenting these ground rules, you know, if it's better in person or if it's something to do ahead of time before we even get started.
Well, I think a lot of people who do groups, particularly if it's, you know, it's going to be virtual anyway, that it does make sense to send out some written material that would have included would be those ground rules and, I don't know, any other, if you feel like there's anything legal you have to have in it or whatever.
Sure,
I would also, though, go over the ground rules at the first meeting out loud in a careful way that allows that gives permission for people to say, well, I don't understand that one. Why do we have to do that? You know, and really almost encourage them to bring up any of that because, you know, some of them may think, oh, she's reading this thing. I've already read it. I'm not going to pay attention. But if you really encourage them to dig in and digest, like about the confidentiality one, you can say, anybody have any past experience with confidentiality not being kept in a group and what that was like, or, you know, just asking people to chime in.
That's a great suggestion. Yeah. I think that really invites engagement and participation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, you also, do you learn well from reading things? Because there is a book on MI in groups. It's not specifically about nutrition groups, but there's, I think it's called Motivational Interviewing in Groups. Guilford is the publisher. They publish all these MI books. And I think Chris Wagner is the first editor, but you ought to be able to find it.
I just looked it up. That's wonderful. I didn't know about...
Yeah, it's very good. And there'll be some chapters in there that don't fit for you, but a lot of it would be helpful. So that might be useful. I'm hearing, Dana, that it will be a certain amount of trial and error for you, so trying the different options, using mostly with video. And, of course, one of the nice things about Zoom is if someone really can't do video on their end, they can still be on with audio.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be able to even see everyone else. Everyone else can't see them. Those are always possibilities. You probably know more about Zoom than I do.
I've been doing telehealth probably just this last year. And it's not my favorite, but I really find that it's helped to retain clients who I've previously, created a great relationship with. So that I'm grateful for.
Right.
But I don't like, usually just at some point I offer it if there's really a conflict with getting to the office. But that's just me personally. I think some people use it all the time and love it.
Yeah. And you, Dana, essentially do what I do. It's only if it's an ongoing client that you feel like you have a good connection with already. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any other thoughts for Dana about groups, setting up groups online, anything?
I mean, this is really helpful just to get some resources that I wasn't aware of. I definitely want to check those out. And and I think just, I mean, when I'm really thinking about this, I really need to sit down and think about pros and cons of all the different formats and to figure out what I want to settle with, you know, what would be in the best interest of, like, just the benefit of group dynamic. I want to do online because it has been requested, but it's, I think in person is still much more my style.
It's better. And Dana, you also mentioned about sort of realizing you can get complacent and wanting to sort of boost things up a little bit. You might want to check also in volume 3, my practice workbook, tip number 80, which actually got encompassed in tip number 73 in volume 3, so you look for tip number 73. I call it pushing your skills envelope, and there's some ideas in there to sort of review, well, let's see, step back, you know, and look at, well, how am I doing? Is there a skill that it's time to work on a little bit more? And that might be useful for you.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll look at that. Thank you so much.
Sure. Sorry, I keep just sending you guys to my tips. I don't want to put you on the spot, Barbara, but did you have something you wanted to bring up? You don't have to. I'm wondering if Barbara has maybe left. It looks like she may have had to leave a call. So what else have we got? Any other concerns? Challenges? Resources?
This is Dina. Nothing from me. So far, this has been super helpful, and it actually was a lot more diverse discussion than I even thought, because we talked about in-person and telehealth, and also now we just discussed groups, so that's kind of cool for me to take in as still, you know, I'm kind of navigating my world here. So thank you to everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dana, and thanks, Rachel. Thank you.
I'm curious whether any of you do much with social media, you know, doing podcasts or blogs or Instagram or any of that. Do any of you do any of that?
This is Dina again. I definitely do. I'm a very big social media engager.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious then what your thoughts were. Did you see the tips that came out earlier this week?
No, I don't think
did.
And the email, the newsletter that you sent?
Yeah.
No, I did not yet.
I sent one earlier this week because I was beginning to explore that. Because some people have contacted me and said, you know, that seems to be an issue that the stance we tend to take in social media is different than with when you're sitting there with one individual. Is that something you noticed, Dina?
I'm reading through your email right now.
Oh.
So,
okay.
Yeah, yes, because it's a weird environment in that you're just speaking to who may or may not be even paying attention to you. And the thing about social media too, depending on what I noticed, depending on the platform. So like Instagram, when I first started there, I very much engaged with my colleagues. So a lot of my followers are also dietitians. And of course they're going to be like, yeah, you go girl with whatever I'm saying. But I really don't want to necessarily speak to them. I want to speak to the general public.
Preaching to the choir, right?
Right, exactly. And then blog wise, that was a very diverse community there too, because that was all random people that I would meet at, you know, workshops. And I had a blog from about like 10 years ago that was just about food and restaurant reviews and, you know, back in the day. So that engagement was very different, strangers from all over the world. So I'm still trying to kind of figure out like what my role is. And I've recently kind of decided like I want to bridge the gaps between, you know, people who've been diagnosed with something, talked to their doctors, sent on their merry way, and never got referred to a dietitian, because a lot of people in my family have had that situation. And so more like, yeah, exactly. So more like the engagement first. But then if I get them to engage and respond, then can I turn that into a virtual group counseling session of some sort, you know, a little less formal, I guess, than what Dana's doing. But, you know, like how many people? Is it a Facebook group discussion? Do I show up as like a live Q&A to answer questions? Because I don't know these people. They're not people I meet with regularly. So they're all potentially strangers at the onset. So it's still something I'm trying to learn and figure out how to like market myself or what my pitch is.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're aware that it's tricky, because it's not as if it's people that you have their labs and you have, you have this contract to work with them, you know, and yet they may start asking really specific questions. And how do you keep it general enough? And suggest that they make an appointment with you, maybe.
Right, right.
Or
with
a local
being,
dietitian.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. With the caveat being like, I don't know you, and this might apply only to your general mm-hmm. question, but not you specifically. So it's,
right.
it's a little challenging there too, to try to field all of that without knowing who, you know, who I'm talking mm-hmm. to going into, and, or if they have an agenda too, because they're not necessarily coming to me by a referral, or they've heard of me word of mouth. They're just engaging in this social platform because they heard, you know, I'll be on a live session and answering, fielding just general questions. So it's possible that they want to also hold my feet to the fire and bring out, you know, whatever their agenda items are too, whether it's, you know, fad diets and what my
right.
opinion is on certain things. So I, you know, a lot of times I feel like it might throw me, and then do I want to spend energy on these things? But I think the better I get at it, the more structured going into this. So mm-hmm. much like if I were in a session and it was being diverted, I could potentially bring it back around again. You know, let's save that for another discussion. This is, you know, the topic
right.
or the scope that I'm
what
trying to stick with
here. You're in that kind of situation. You are giving information and advice and scientific information
exactly.
and, you know, all mm-hmm. that. And that if, particularly if you have someone who seems to be wanting to argue with you, you know, has some sort of myth or something that sounds crazy to you, sticking with the very MI way of giving information, which is very neutral, factual, as opposed to arguing.
Exactly.
Because that encourages them to argue on the other side. Simply say, you know, the research shows that when people do X, Y, and Z, this happens, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, or
exactly.
this is the way our GI system works, or whatever it is, in a very factual kind of way. And then, you know, leave it up to people. And you may end up getting through to more of the people who are just listening and aren't arguing with you.
Right. And it's funny. I've come across the wording that I use that seems to resonate and makes me feel better too, is I'll say my understanding of what I know, like right now, my understanding of the current research is, so that
mm-hmm.
it almost softens
right.
it. Not that I have to be softened, mm-hmm. so it almost softens it a little bit, as in you might've heard something else and I don't know, you know, hundreds of citations and
mm-hmm.
what the N equals, whatever your case, your
right.
study shows you. I don't know all the things, but what I've read is this. So my understanding is this,
mm-hmm.
and that's how I tend to phrase it.
Right. And hopefully they're respecting you. I mean, that's why they're on the call or the whatever.
Yeah, so far.
That's what they want. And so you can say, I stay as up to date as I possibly can in a way that the general public isn't able to, which is true, right? You know, you can just say that. And then,
exactly.
and my current understanding is this. It's your choice what you do with this information.
Right. I'm here just to guide you, but you can execute however you see fit or not.
Yeah, I'm here to just tell you what the latest is. And, of course, it does keep changing, as we all know. Okay. Anything else about social media or anything else? Okie dokie. This has been great. Dina, do keep in mind whether
mm-hmm.
you want to try to get me in New York. It would be fun to have you at one of my 2-day counseling intensives.
Sure.
Swing,
I'm actually,
way,
if it's okay with you,
yeah.
I'm going to email you back on one of the most recent emails just so at least you have my information and we can
absolutely.
Keep in touch that way. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. Okay. Well, we might as well wind up. This has been great, guys, and thank you for being on the call, and do stay in touch.
Thanks, Molly.
Thanks,
everybody.
Yep.
Thank
Happy
you so much,
2020
everyone.
To all of you.